For sure.
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 Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter. Oh, wait a second. Oh, hold on.
Oh, was I supposed to say something?
No, no, no. That's okay. for those of you listening at home, if you didn't read the description or the mailbag, you might be sitting there waiting for Jay to say something snarky. But Jay is not here. This is a very special day, and I know that sounds bad because I said Jay's not here and it's special, but it is a unique experience because this is the first episode of For Sure that Jay or I, weren't able to be here for. Obviously I am, but so far it's been the two of us for every single episode. Now, the good thing is that Jay is not here for a good reason. We talked a couple episodes ago about how he works. For those of you who don't know, he works for Fox Sports Detroit as a freelance producer. And so he typically does the Red Wings games and the Pistons games and the Tigers and stuff. Obviously, none of that is happening. So he is able to do some of these kind of retro throwback games that they're doing. So he's able to get some work there. But he's working on like a big project this weekend. So it's a good reason that he can't be here, but it's still sad that he can't be here. But as you already heard, I am very, very excited for this part. Sarah is joining us as For Sure's first ever co-host. So how do you feel about that, Sarah? You're the first ever. You're the Joan Rivers.
Well, I've already missed my first cue, so that kind of gets like the stage fright out of the way where I've already messed up. So I'm good to go now. You know, but it's a nice change of scenery. It's really hard to get a physical change of scenery these days. So a digital change of scenery, I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit later. These are very strange times. These are weird times. Nothing feels normal because it isn't. But before I go on for too long, we are going to introduce our guest, right? So for today, we have back for the second time on the program, we have Ryan Stimson, who you may know from a bunch of things, obviously from Twitter. He is one of the people that brings us the Rochester Analytics Conference every year. And he's also, involved with Hockey Graphs, but he's also the author of a book, Tape to Space, which is about hockey tactics. And we've had him on the show before, but he is back to join us today. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm good. Do I get another shirt for a second appearance?
Oh, boy. I don't know. We'll see. You know what we should do is we should start making For Sure face masks so that people can rep us when they go out in public.
There you go.
Yeah, that would be smart. I don't know why you haven't thought of that.
Thanks for having me. Excited to come back, make my triumphant return to the place that made me famous. I think it was the first podcast I went on after we wrote the book. Or after I wrote the book, so I appreciated that at the time. And I don't know if we're gonna do the Analytics Conference this year with everything going on. We might do some online thing in the fall or something, but might just get bumped a year. So that's me.
Yeah, I mean, I have obviously very fond memories three times so far. And I look forward to going back the next time that we have it in person, although it would be cool to be able to do something in the fall as well.
Yeah.
So we were talking a little bit before we recorded because normally, Jay and I go through and we have like a list of a couple things to talk about. There's only a couple real like big things in the news in the NHL right now. And since this is on the same podcasting network as our Red Wing show, WHIM Radio, most people kind of listen to both. And we pretty much talked about those at pretty good length last episode of WHIM Radio. So if you're interested in our thoughts on the lottery taking place in June, potentially, or the season potentially coming back in July or thereabouts with these not neutral site games, but, you know, every division would have like one hosting venue or something like that. Check out the WHIM Radio in this podcast feed. We talked about it a bunch. But actually, there is a little bit of news. There is a rumor that I forgot about, a good old Bob McKenzie rumor. And I know definitely how Sarah and I are going to feel about this. So I will ask you, Ryan, about what your thoughts are. There is I guess I don't want to say a rumor, because I guess it's a, you know, proposal, but it's certainly not the NHL saying, oh, this is going to happen. But there's talk of doing the lottery as a five, like, well, basically the bottom five picks would go into the lottery and only one winner, right? So rather than Detroit having the best odds of picking fourth, they could pick no lower than second, right? And they'd obviously have a good chance of picking first. So as a non-Detroit fan, what do you think about that that option or that possibility?
Well, I think for Detroit fans, it's an improvement, right? Because now you're getting first or second. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know why they would, I guess, change it. I mean, teams, what, they only had, 10 games left, roughly?
Yeah.
For the most part, 10 or 12. So, I mean, the season's largely played out. Yeah, there might be some jostling at, you know, the bottom, of course, but nothing's going to change too much. But hey, if you're a Detroit fan, I think you have to love it, because now you're guaranteed one of those two players that everybody talks about. So,
yeah, I mean, it's, you know, again, with Detroit, you would pick no lower than second, which is fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, especially, you know, because, I mean, pretty much from, you know, for our listeners, we had our draft, our big draft episode last time. And, you know, Lafreniere is pretty much the consensus number one right now, you know, but there is definitely a possibility that Byfield in, you know, he's almost a year younger, and he's a center as opposed to a wing. So it could be one of those cases where down the road, Byfield ends up being, you know, as good or pretty close to it. I mean, he could even be better. So that would be fantastic to get one of those two players.
No, I was just gonna add, like, it, you know, it, these, when it's like one consensus player, but another who, you know, could be right behind him. I mean, I'm not a huge draft scout, but those are the two names that you see a lot of. And so looking at it a little bit, it's like, oh, well, these are two highly touted prospects. One, yeah, probably has a clear lead over the other. But at the end of the day, if you could guarantee you're going to get one of these really good players, I mean, that's all really you should be focused on. It's not a, oh, we missed out. It's like, well, you know, Sabres fans missed out years ago on McDavid. They still got Eichel. It's like, okay, you missed out on the clear favorite, but you still had a really good player added to your team. So
yeah, and I mean, you know, Eichel obviously with memory serves, there was the really bad injury that sidelined him for a while early on in his career. But you know, he's definitely shown himself to be a really, really top notch player in the NHL. So obviously, not having McDavid sucks, but at the same time, like, that's, you know, I mean, most drafts don't have a McDavid. You know, most drafts, Eichel would have been the best player.
Right.
You know, like that type of level. So, Sarah, what would you think about this happening? It's kind of like a softball here for you.
Well, maybe not, because, okay. I mean, for the sake of, like, for the good of the team,
yeah,
obviously, yes, that would be great, because there's nothing that we don't need. So we just need the best of anything that we can possibly get. However, with Yzerman, we now have like the cider effect of maybe he has a player in mind. He's like, I don't care if I don't pick until the second round. I've got the one player in mind that no one else is going to think of. So I don't care if I get first pick, second pick, or if I trade all my picks, I'm going to get the guy that I want. And, you know, when Ken Holland would do that, like when he drafted like Rasmussen, everyone's like, what? Are you stupid? Yes, I think you are. But if Yzerman does that same thing, we're like, all right, I think you're a genius. I'm going to trust you. So while I guess it'd be not, you know, it's not as fun to have a predictable draft, but I guess it is better for like the good of the team. It's just less interesting for me personally as like a pot stirrer. But as far as the plan, yes, for the good of the whole, I'll say that would be a great plan, because no one can possibly catch the Red Wings on the race to the bottom. That's our spot. We nailed it. We nailed the tank this season. We deserve something good for that.
Mission accomplished, for sure. Yeah.
We're number 31.
Somehow we also lost to Seattle. I mean, they don't even exist, and they got more points than we did.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only downside from Red Wings fan perspective is how annoying it's going to be when Ottawa passes us to pick first. Because, yes, they were bad as well this year, but we were way worse. And Ottawa already has some really, really good players coming up. More than we do, I think. Although I think, you know, our prospects, your system isn't like bare or anything. We have some really good players in the pipeline. But, you know, it's like they seem like they might be better than us quicker. And then for them to also then get Lafreniere would be annoying. But
you trust the Senators to actually build a team and not massively screw it up? I mean, every week there's something new with what the Senators have done. I mean, next they're going to get involved in a land war in Asia. You just don't know with them. So while the Red Wings are catastrophically terrible, I think we're still more trustworthy now that we have Steve Yzerman, especially to like, we would, I don't want to see a prospect's face, you know, go pale in horror and like Home Alone face on Zoom when they find out they're going to the Red Wings. Mm. I want them to do that when they find out they're going to Ottawa, to at least give us that, just that little shred of pride that, yes, on ice we're terrible, but as like a concept, we're still not completely the worst.
So you want the McDavid lottery face for yes. Ottawa? Yeah.
Yes, not for us. That would be a blow. That would be like, we have so little pride to cling to. Just let me have that. Just that little bit of something.
Actually, we do have something that we kind of planned ahead for, but we're going to hold off on that in a little bit. First, we are going to go to, we have two listener questions, two listener / reader questions. They are very far apart, which I think is great. So let's do this, right? So the first one is from Brad Hughes. First of all, thank you, Brad. You ask questions all the time for us, which is fantastic because it gives us things to talk about. So Brad asks, let's say you got the cloning machine you were tinkering with in your garage to work. First of all, what are you doing in my garage? Second of all, here's the rest of the question. If you could clone one player 21 times to make a team of 22 identical skaters, whom would you choose? Would a team of Sidney Crosby's beat a team of Connor McDavid's? Would a team of Gordie Howe's beat a team of Steve Yzerman's? Crosby's against Yzerman's, McDavid's against Howe's? Would a team of Gretzky's even win a game against any of these? Ooh, that's blasphemous. Would any of them come close to beating a team of Fedorov's? I like how he asks the question and then gives like a bunch of possible answers as well.
It's really a multiple choice question.
Yeah. Would watching a team of Datsyuk's against another team of Datsyuk's be better than doing a bunch of cocaine and then riding a motorcycle out of a helicopter, right? A reference to the John Boy's classic tweet about playoff hockey. All right. So finally, which player, current or past, would you clone? I'm guessing we are going to assume that, you know, they are in their prime, right? As opposed to like a 97-year-old like classic player from the 50s.
See, that's where my thoughts were going when I saw this question. Because when you clone them, are you cloning them as like babies? Is this like a clone war situation where you then have to raise all these like babies to be good players? You know, with my short answer is, you know, Fedorov, but is Fedorov if he's raised in like Maryland by me? And no, he's not. So it's like nature versus nurture. And then part two of that is, do they all have to be cloned at the same time? Could I have a team of like 22 to 32 year old of the same player? So you have the invincibility and speed of youth combined with the wisdom of age. And how does that team compare? So I clearly thought about it. Like, this has been running in my mind now for a while.
I think you get one copy of each player for every age, for every year they played in the league. So you have a 20, 21, 22, 23-year-old player up until they retired.
Oh. So then if we're doing this 21 times, now I have a clear answer, and it's a different answer than I would have gone with. Because now I'm going with Jágr.
I think I was probably going to go Jágr, so I'll change it.
No, that's okay. Yeah, because if it's really interesting. I didn't even, like, I just assumed, oh, yeah, they're all in their prime. You know, that's it. And now my mind is open to the multiverse of possibilities. Exactly. And you were worried you weren't going to bring something to the podcast. I told you not to worry. Okay. So I guess, well, Ryan is our guest. So we're going to go with Ryan's rule then. So obviously, Sarah, you can.
Well, no, you can't. I mean, because not everybody played 21 years anyway, right?
I know.
Yeah.
So then you'd have to go with like.
They're all in their prime. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we'll go with they're all in their prime. So, Sarah, are you still doing Fedorov, or are you going to?
I'm still doing Fedorov because I know that he can play defense and offense, and that his younger years would be kind of leaning one way, and then the older years would be leaning the other way, even because he's in his prime more than just 1 year. I'm going to take, like, 2 years of prime and put that on a team. I also think that he would have good locker room chemistry with himself. I'm not sensing a lot of self-hatred or self-frustration. I feel like he knows himself pretty well, so there wouldn't be any arguments in the locker room. And I guess I'm going to trust him to be a goaltender, or we're just going to play six skaters and hope for the best. I think I'm with him. I might even just do six skaters.
Yeah.
But I think that's my answer because I know that he's versatile, and so I can make sure that he's going to be good front and back end.
Interesting. All right, Ryan, so we got one answer for Fedorov. So what is yours going to be?
So I'm assuming that if I have a clone machine that works, then I am likely, after you do it to, you know, for good reasons, like, you know, saving lives or preserving great minds and science and all these noble things, then you're just going to get to straight entertainment, which is what we arrived in this situation, right? So I think I might go with the pure entertainment answer and just have a team of 21 Ovechkins and just win or lose like 15 to 14 every night and have all sorts of antics and wild celebrations.
Ooh.
Because I think if you have the you know, greatest era-adjusted goal scorer in 21 times over, I think that could be a fun recipe for ticket sales.
Yeah, no, I think that would be great. Now, would you have a, you know, similar to what Sarah said, would you have a goalie Ovechkin, or would you play six skaters in an empty net?
I don't know. I think if I'm, you know, running this exhibition league or whatever that has clone players, I think we just have the where they have the shooter tutors that you just hang in the goal, so you have to score in each of the corners.
Yeah,
and I think you just play six. So that's what I would do.
Okay, are you like?
I don't know. Ovechkin goalie might be really entertaining. I could just see him flying out of the crease and just straight tackling people, though. So
exactly, like for one brief chaotic second, I thought about trying to go with a team of 22 Dominic Hasek's.
I thought about that too, though. It wasn't just you.
Tripping penalties galore in that one.
Because, like, you figure, okay, he's not. I mean, he obviously spent, you know, his career playing goal, but he's a very, very athletic person. You know, you think that, like, it would it be really that hard for him to learn to play other positions well? I don't know. Probably. In terms of, like, you know, would he be even close to an Ovechkin or a Fedorov or somebody like that? Almost definitely not.
But his intimidation factor is really high.
That is, like, a good,
he is an intimidating guy. He's got that the goalie crazy eyes. So he would slow some people down with that if your other team was not ready to face the Hasek face without a cage over it. That's like a Hannibal Lecter situation. Like, when he's in goal, at least he's behind the cage. He's probably not going to bite your face off. But if he's just out there in the wild as a forward, can't be sure about that. I'd be thinking about backing off of that.
my joke answer before my real answer is a team of 22 Tom Wilsons. I'm going to win by attrition. I'm just going to injure all of your Ovechkins and Fedorovs and win because I have more players.
I think your team is more likely to infighting and just pick fights with each other rather than win.
Could be. Although Tom Wilson seems to really like himself.
Right. So how could he stand another version of him on his, you know, getting accolades for the same things? I don't know. That's dicey. That's dicey, Pete. That's dicey.
That would be tough. It's hard because, like, logically, I think the best counter to your teams would be a team of 22 in his prime Sidney Crosby's. But since I'm a Red Wings fan, and before that an Islanders fan, I am incapable of saying that as an answer. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to what I said before. I'm going to go with Jágr. Yeah. In his prime, Jágr was a unbelievable player. And I think that he would be able to adapt and play defense. I think he would be pretty good at defense. Maybe not as good as Fedorov, but I think he'd be good. I think this would be a great series. I wonder if this could be something that could be simulated on like NHL 20 when they run out of, you know, they're doing the month long thing where the players play against each other. And I said this in our article that I thought that we would have had a much better chance if we had had one of our players like 8-year old sons playing. We'd probably win.
Probably. Yeah.
They probably trash talk really well.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. So thank you, Brad, for sending that in. And please keep asking more good questions. We do have another question, but we're going to take a quick break because I don't know how long this is going to run today. And I want to make sure that we get our two mandated ad breaks in. So we'll be back in just a second. And we're back. So we have a second listener question. It is from WolG88. I'm not sure if that's a soft G or a hard G, but thank you for sending in your question. Since this is a pretty data-centered podcast, what is your methodology for removing useless statistics from your data? Do you go by feel, or do you have a scientific / statistic method for elimination? So I thought this was an interesting question, and I'm not really sure how I want to answer it. So I'm going to go to our guest first, which is what I do whenever we have a tough question. So Ryan, what do you think about this? Like, what's the way you approach this?
I think, and it's good. It's a good question because, you know, something that you see on, you know, Twitter a lot, especially with like data visualization centered accounts, is, you know, player gets traded, a player gets signed, and someone will post like a, you know, a chart or something of like 35 different stats, right, for that player. And it's like, cool, which one of these matter, right?
Right.
And so I think ultimately what you want to do is you would run, you know, a regression on those data points with, you know, what your desired output measure of value would be, whether that's, you know, goal scoring, goal suppression, you know, goals above replacements, you know, whatever you're using is your target variable there to arrive at your measure of talent or value that player brings. And what you'll quickly learn is that most of that stuff, you know, doesn't matter or has very small impact, since, you know, you could post a chart with, you know, 25 metrics and there's probably 3 or 4 in there that are really driving any kind of the main value. And so, you know, usually just through regression analysis, you can, you know, figure out which ones, you know, correlate to each other. Like, you know, so which ones are really kind of duplicates of the same thing. You know, if they take a lot of shots, are they going to score a lot of goals? So if they take a lot of high danger chances, are they going to score a lot of goals? So right there, you have three things that are probably all measuring close to the same, right? Hmm. So I would look at, yeah, how things correlate to each other, how they correlate to what your measure of value is. And if it has a small correlation or, you know, one of these statistical measures that folks use is, you know, what's called the p-value, you know, the likelihood that something occurs due to random chance or not. You know, that those are metrics you can probably drop from whatever you're using to evaluate. So those kind of charts that you see on Twitter, it's, you know, everyone's involved, everyone's in the community. You know, I'm never going to not argue for people getting involved in something that's really just fun for a lot of people, but you know, it's if a player is signed or traded, or, you know, people are debating a player's value and somebody throws up one of those charts, I'm like, that doesn't tell me anything. You know, that all that tells me is you can, you know, drop a bunch of metrics into a program in Tableau or something, you know, or in Excel. And I mean, so regression at the end of the day is generally what is going to help you be safe as far as what metrics to trust.
Yeah, we always want to make sure that we are practicing safe statistics, right? We want to make sure we are protected from bad outcomes.
Right, exactly.
It's funny, as you were saying that, I had flashbacks to one of the very first things that I did, which was a Tableau thing of a bunch of different statistics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that, yeah. I've done that before, too.
Oh, yeah.
Ago, and I think one of my very first articles were like, look at these 15 different passing metrics I came up with. Look at, isn't it cool?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, so everyone starts out like that, but eventually... Oh, yeah. You just have to make the conscious decision to get better, improve your craft, and realize, like, oh, I want to make sure I'm presenting something that can't be misinterpreted by somebody else. You know, yeah. I want to put forth the message that there's little, like, one logical conclusion from this, not have someone take that and then kind of use it to shape a different argument. It's like, oh, no, that's not what that's showing. Like, okay, well, let's just eliminate that possibility. But no, we've all done it. We've all done it. So
I like okay. So obviously I think, you know, your answer is, you know, if there's going to be a one answer for this question, I think that's it. Because it ties in a lot of the other stuff you could say, because you're basically looking at the context and not just here's a bunch of things. And they're all equal, like, cause they're not. So, you know, for example, like if you look at the Evolving Wild Twins, expected goals model, the distance to the net, for, you know, if I remember correctly, the distance to the net is like incredibly important compared to almost every other thing. I think it's like what is it, like probably 4 or 5 times more important than anything else, I think, if I remember correctly. So, you know, in their model, like that is incredibly, you know, that's treated as incredibly important. Right. Yeah. So one thing I wrote down, so that it's, I don't just say exactly the same thing, is, and this is an area I've kind of fallen into a trap, even fairly recently, like this past season, because I just wasn't thinking about it. Objective metrics versus subjective metrics. And by that, I mean things like giveaways, takeaways, right? Hits. I mean, obviously hits isn't going to be used too much for anything, but like if you're evaluating a defenseman and you're looking at his giveaways and takeaways, it's not to say that there can't be any value there. But that is being recorded by a person, you know, as opposed to if a player takes a shot, they're not like, oh, well, I mean, I guess there could be some instances, but you know, if a player has a puck on a stick and he shoots it towards the goal, that's going to be counted a shot. Whereas giveaways, takeaways are very subjective. One scorer might put it as one and one person might not. Obviously, you always have home team bias, or I guess you don't always, right? But a lot of times you'll have home team bias. You know, when you look at things like every year, they're like, oh, this guy has so many hits. It's like, well, you know, look at how many hits he has per game at home as opposed to hits he has on the road. You know, and sometimes there's a pretty big discrepancy and you're like, oh, well, maybe, you know, there's some home team bias baked in there. So I think just like one kind of pitfall to avoid is to make sure that, you know, even just in the start, you're looking at things that are not just, well, one person put it this way and one person didn't. It's not to say that there's zero value there, but sometimes I think that people can kind of overemphasize that, or, you know, kind of treat that as too much.
Yeah, and they also think about it like it's a bad thing. Like, so, I mean, if somebody has a lot of giveaways, you know, the casual fan, and I owe, you know, a lot of this, you know, poor information to, you know, largely beat writers across the league. You know, there are definitely some great beat writers, but you know, I think most folks would agree that, like, as a whole, like the, you know, old-time view of sports media, especially in hockey just seems to dwell on this. But just finding, like, the worst numbers, the worst metrics to try to, like, say players are bad. You know, if you look at giveaways, it's like, well, it just means they have the puck a lot, right? And yeah. Good players tend to have the puck, and hockey is a game that is played on ice. You're on skates, and it's like a 3-inch rubber biscuit that you're chasing around with sticks, right? You're going to lose control of it a lot. So even if you're really good. So I think it's just always important to ask, you know, well, is that good or bad? And then kind of think about it. So,
yeah. So Sarah, I know that you are not involved in like the creating of statistics or writing about statistics, but you are involved on Twitter as a consumer, right, of them. Like, you know, you're reading articles, you're seeing things. So I'll kind of maybe change this a little bit. So like when you are looking for things like this, what are some things that you look for, or what are some things where you're like, huh, maybe this isn't, maybe I shouldn't give a lot of credence to this thing.
Well, one thing I know is that I will never look at plus minus, because as Ryan was talking, all I was thinking about is Andreas Athanasiou and certain beat writer or beat writers who were constantly just dumping all over him about how bad. Because it's like, yeah, it's bad, but so is the entire team. So who cares? But as far as, I mean, some of it really for me is like subjective. It's not do I like the person, but it's like, do I trust the person who is explaining this data to me? Because I'm not going to really be able to look at anything and be like, ah, yes, I understand this. I'll be like, oh, blue is good and orange is bad. Got it. So I need people to explain it to me. And I like, it's sad because I like studied math and science. I should know how to do this, but I don't. I know about the sun and how the sun works, but not like how hockey works.
So we just need to translate it to, you know, optimal distance from the sun for life. Like, that's the sweet spot for player value. Yeah. And then you just need to translate all player value as like too far away. It's like, oh, well, you can't have hospitable life there, so that player must be bad. Like, you just change
who has the most gravity. Who is attracting the puck to them by having the highest gravitational pull?
Oh my god.
Phil Kessel.
So there's a project that, since there's no hockey going on, somebody can jump in, one of your listeners can jump in and say, oh, I'll do that. And then we can have a fun new tool to play with this summer.
Oh yeah. My god, that sounds amazing.
Help me out with that. I'll come up with ideas for extra fancy stats and then someone else can go do them. But I mean, the one thing I like to see, even though I am not a very good consumer of stats, is how many people really seem to enjoy making it, talking about it, and just being really interested in it. You know, everybody has their own lane. My lane is more in the creative arts of memes. But, you know, it's just been really nice to see over the past few years the real uptick in people, whether they're good stats or bad stats, just being enthusiastic and passionate about it. You know, anything that gets people interested and keeps them interested, I'll take that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and the other thing I was thinking of, and is some, you know, as a moderator for our website, I have to, one of my jobs is to read every single comment. And I'm the type of person who and I don't mean this as like an insult to any specific commenter. It's like, I usually prefer not to read comments on articles, just in general, in my daily life. But you know, that's part of my job. And I will say, as a community, we have a much, much better commentariat than many, many other sites do. And I think a lot of that is because of the moderation. You know, we're not going to let somebody come in and just start being a jackass. Like, they're going to get warned or banned if they, you know, go too far. But like, I can't tell you how many times I see somebody like, I know it's a small sample size, but it's like, no, just stop right there. Like, stop. like you're so close. Like, you almost have it, you know? And like, there seems to be this idea that as long as I mention that it's a small sample size, then that's okay. And there are, I'm not going to say that's a hard and fast rule. Like, there are some instances where you can get some type of value from that. But sometimes I think it's just almost like, I know I'm supposed to say this, but I'm going to still try to use this as if it has like a lot of meaning. And I know that's something that I'm like, no, please come back. You can do it.
It's like people who were serious when they were saying things like that, when the Red Wings at the first three games of the past two Red Wings seasons being, well, not last one, but like this one, being like, well, we're on pace, plan the parade. Yeah. Like, if you're saying that as a joke, fine. But some people are like, well, you know, maybe it's not going to be as bad this year. I know it's a small sample size, but we've now won like two games. Yeah. And then never again.
I remember like his first year on the Islanders, like Mike Comrie was on pace to score like 300 and something goals after two games. It's like, it's going to happen.
Yeah, and when it comes to like small samples too, there's always a thing of like, you know, who are players playing with, or just, you know, what teams is your team playing, right? You know, so like players that have great, you know, November, they had a great start to the month or something. And then you look at the schedule, it's like, oh, well, they played, you know, they went through the Northeast and they played Buffalo and Ottawa and New Jersey. It's like, sure, of course they had a good, you know, start to the month or something, you know.
It was really nice of you not to say Detroit, even though we were all thinking it. That was really nice.
I'm sure we'll get there. I'm sure we'll get there eventually. But I mean, you guys are like, you know, you're so far into this. I mean, because, you know, I grew up a Devils fan, and you know, they've, you know, when I was younger, they were just always good. Yeah. And then, like, the lockout happened, and they were, like, they were still okay, like, back in 06. Mm-hmm. You know, they were okay for a few years after that. And then it was kind of bad for a while. You know, and then they had the one run in 2012. And then really kind of since then, it's just been woof. So I get it. But once you, I think, come to grips with that, it's like, oh, you know, my team's bad right now, but there could be something better. It's like, okay, we'll kind of embrace it. So,
like with us, like the past two seasons, it's basically been like, we know the team's going to be bad. This last season was harder because they were like historically bad. You know, they were like comically bad.
Yeah.
And like, you know, kind of what we would always say in the beginning of the season is like, we know we're not going to win a lot. We know we're probably going to be like a bottom three team, but we just want to see like exciting hockey. We want to see the young guys, you know, take steps forward. You know, we want to see like some building blocks for the future, and that's okay. And then this last season, it was hard because there were nights where you're just like, if I didn't have to watch this game, I would not even turn it on because I know it's going to be horrible, you know? And yeah, this last season was really hard. So hopefully, I mean, next year we're going to be bad again, most likely. But hopefully we won't be this bad, because I don't know if the fan base can take another year like this.
Another one would be tough.
It's really hard. Okay, so we are going to take one more break, and when we come back, we have a hopefully fun exercise makes it sound horrible. Hopefully like a fun game that we did that will combine hockey with something that all three of us love that you won't be able to guess, but try to guess and we'll see if you're right, but you're not gonna be right. And we are back. So we have a last segment here for you that hopefully you'll think is fun. We all three of us we are people who enjoy playing video games. Obviously, for listeners of our podcast, you've heard Jay and I talk about the various NHL games and new features, etc. But we are going to be talking about a video game that is not NHL. It's not even close to hockey related, but we are going to relate it to hockey because this is a hockey podcast and we want to try to have a tie in at some point. So we are going to go through the game. Now, there's not going to be any spoilers or anything. We're going to go through the game Horizon Zero Dawn, which is a fantastic game for PlayStation. It's been out for a little while, a couple years, but I know I played it relatively recently. Definitely enjoyed it. And I remember talking to both Sarah and Ryan about it as I was playing it. And you know, we had a really good conversation. So I figured this is going to be something that we all care about and we could have some fun here. So what we're going to do is in the game, and again, this is not a spoiler, like you find this out right away. You basically have to come up against these creatures that are like machines that are similar to animals. Okay, I know that sounds weird. If you play it, you'll see it. You know, just watch the video if you need to. So what we're going to do is there's a whole bunch of different options, different machines that you fight. And what we did is we went through and we linked some of them to NHL teams. All right, so... let's see. So, Sarah, you want to kick it off with one of the machines. Who did you link it to? And then if we had the same thing, because like we don't have all of them, but if we had the same thing, we'll do it. If not, we'll move on to another one. So what do you want to start us off with?
I would like to start off with Glinthawks because they are my least favorite. For anyone who hasn't played the game, they're these birds that shoot ice at you and they screech and they try to tackle you and they are just really annoying and they eat garbage. So my team of...
Before you say it, if we have the same one, I'm going to scream. So I'm going to be so excited.
Okay. So I had a couple, but the one, I think the main one is Toronto.
Yes.
Is it because they eat garbage?
They recycle garbage. So like they take garbage from other machines or teams and turn it into something worse. And they're really annoying. So that was why, that was my, my scientific reasoning.
So, piggybacking off of that, so I had Glinthawks in my, I basically wrote, like, they think they're good, but they're really just annoying because in the game, there's one other bird, which is the storm bird, which is like undeniably good and tough to kill. And so I put that as Boston, because Boston's always really good. In Toronto, you know, they think they're good, but they really just never quite as good as that. So like the lesser version of that. So that's how I kind of equated those. And I'm very excited that someone else also thought Toronto and Glenhawks was a perfect match, because it is.
Yeah. Wait, Ryan, did you say Frost? No, you said a different one than I was thinking.
For what?
So you said you had the Glenhawks and Stormbirds, right?
Yeah, it's Stormbirds for Boston.
Okay.
Are you about to say Frostclaw for Boston? Because that's what I said.
That, yeah, well, here, let me just do that one. Yeah. I have Frostclaws, which is a DLC machine. And I wrote, you hate to admit how hard to defeat they are. And then you see them in action and you're like, oh, yeah, shit.
That's good.
Because it's like, I think even though I know Boston's really good and they have, I mean, obviously the one amazing line, but then they have, you know, a really good team, you know, good team other than that. I, for some reason, I never really put them up in like, oh, yeah, they're like the top team in the league or like the top two or three. And I don't know why. I don't know why. I should. Right? when I think about it, I do. But like for some reason, I never think like that. So Sarah, was your reasoning the same or similar?
It was similar, but it was also because they kind of look like a bear.
No, that's true. Yeah.
They're, you know, true, and it's like they're good on the ice. They're good at ice things. And it's really satisfying when you beat one.
Yes.
It just feels really good when you take them down. Yeah. So that was my reasoning, is they look like a bear and it's fun when you defeat one.
Well, I will do one.
Like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I will do one next because I had a different machine for Toronto. I do love your reasoning. I think it makes a lot of sense. So I did Toronto as a stalker because at first it seems like they're going to tear you up. But then when you realize that they have no defense and a suspect goalie, they're not really that hard to beat. So did any of you have a different team for a stalker?
I couldn't decide between two. I put Minnesota and Arizona. Okay. And I couldn't really decide. And my explanation was that you rarely see or hear from them.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I love it.
Except for when they're, you know, committing all sorts of like illegal actions at scouting combines and stuff.
Oh my god, they actually do a type of brain scan on you, don't they?
Yeah, they do. That's right. So.
Oh my god, that's amazing. Sarah, what's another one you got?
Let's see. I picked the Sawtooth, which is one you run into fairly early in the game as an example of something that's big and hard to defeat. And then as you go through the game, you find they're extremely predictable and very susceptible to being lit on fire and exploding. So I said they were the Blackhawks because the Blackhawks think that they're hot shit and then they actually explode into a pile of hot shit and are not as hard to defeat as you think they are. You know, a couple of years ago in the beginning of a game, yeah, they're kind of tough, but now they're not so tough. That was my reasoning.
So this is two for two now that Sarah's stolen. Because it, well, not, well, I guess it's just not exact. Like the line of thinking was exactly the same as that. Yeah, you come across them early and it's like, oh shit, this thing's going to be tough. I'm going to always struggle with this thing. But then eventually, yeah, later on, you're like, oh, you're just kind of messing with it. You can kind of beat him at will. And I went the Sharks because for forever they've been so good. But now it's like, oh, well, they're not so good anymore. So it's like the Sawtooth, like early on, it's like, yeah, they're tough. And then, you know, it's like, they're not really that difficult to face. And the Sharks have always been good, but oh, they're not really that good anymore. So
yeah.
Pretty similar reasoning. I just went a different team there, but yeah, get out of my head, Sarah. Okay.
It's definitely one of the things that I talk to people, like when I'm trying to explain to the game to people, it's one of the things I come back to where like the first, maybe like 4 or 5 hours of gameplay, I'm like stalking through the grass and like, you know, going really slow and stealthily. And then after about like 10 hours, I'm like, oh, Sawtooth, I'm going to run right at it and just like I'm going to be like jumping and like firing as I'm running towards it and then just like impale it. And yeah. all right. So I'll go with one. I did the long leg. The long leg is one of the weirder looking ones for me, one of the weird ones. And I said it is the Pittsburgh Penguins because it is far more deadly than it looks. you know, you look at this thing and you're like, you know, the center looks pretty deadly, but like, what the hell, like, what the hell are these arms? Right. I don't know. I've never heard of these before. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, that's, this right arm is killing me. Right. You know, so yeah, I'm going to put the penguins for the long legs.
Okay. That's not what I had, but it was somewhat similar line of thinking. Mm-hmm. As far as they're more dangerous than they should be. Mm-hmm. So I put the hurricanes. And part of that is because the long legs, they're like these kind of chicken things, mm-hmm. and they screech at you. They're like, completely accurate.
Yeah.
Representation. Yeah,
don't look it up. It sounds just like that.
So they like scream at you, and they always find you. And that's how I feel about the hurricanes. Like, if I'm on Twitter, I can't get away from them. And if I'm like watching any game at all, there's going to somehow be some headline about them. So, but they're not terrible at hockey. Yeah. So that was my reasoning. They're loud, they find you, and they are better than they have any right to be.
Actually, long leg is one I didn't have one for, but I like both of those. Those are good.
Cool. All right, so what is one that you did have?
All right, so I had the Corruptor as the Flyers, because I thought, like, in the game, the Corruptors are one that go and they spread this corruption to manipulate other machines. And I kind of thought of it as like, well, what's a team who the fandom for that team is going to lead to personal and moral corruption? And that's probably the Flyers.
Yeah, you could also link that to Toronto if you're doing Twitter.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Sarah, what's one that you got, either if you had that or if you have a different one?
I had that one, but I'll be brief about it so I can say something else.
Okay.
But I had maybe the Avalanche or the Penguins, but that's from a Red Wings fan perspective, because what a Corruptor does is it makes everything around it really, really pissed off and violent.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel when confronted with those teams.
There you go.
But something else I had is I had Bellowbacks, and I don't care if it's fire or ice. So they're these like two-legged things with like a huge jar of goop as their butt, and they just kind of stomp around.
Yeah.
And they're, again, totally accurate. So for me, my reason with them is it is really, really fun to blow them up, and they make a massive explosion, just melt down, and they take out everything around them. So I said they were the Habs, because there is nothing more fun to me than to watch the Habs fan base go absolutely batshit insane when they lost to the Red Wings. And that's the similar feeling of it blowing up these Bellowbacks and just destroying everything around them. They're very self-destructive. So that was my reasoning.
I won't argue with that. That's good.
Yeah. All right, let's see. So I wanted to make sure that I did both Detroit and Buffalo. I wanted to make sure I had each of our teams. But I'll do the Detroit one first. And I said that the Detroit Red Wings are the Grazers, because they're not much of a threat. But sometimes when provoked, they will attack. And they can sometimes end up hurting themselves while attacking you.
Yeah, that's good.
I'll accept that. And sometimes they shed useful parts.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, that's even better. That's perfect. Yeah, pretend I said that too. No, I'm kidding. That's awesome. Did either one of you have a Detroit one?
I had, I kind of grouped, like, so there's a couple of the machines that are, you know, because some of them were like bred for more violent means and others were not. And so I kind of grouped some of the bottom feeding teams in the standings along with that latter group, like the Grazers, the Broadhead, right, the Striders, as like the Devils, the Red Wings, the Senators, all kind of those ones that you can kind of just, you come across them and see them. It's like, yeah, they don't pose any threat, and I'm going to just kind of have my way and do whatever I want with them. So.
So, Sarah, I know you must have done a Detroit one, right?
I did, and I had a couple of thoughts. At first, I thought maybe a Strider. For anyone who didn't play, they're like, they're horses. That's what they are. They're horses.
Yeah. Yeah.
I ended up settling on the Watcher. And I have a red eye thing, too. So I think the regular Watcher is the Red Wings, and the red eye Watcher is actually the Senators. Because they're both similarly, like, destructive, but the Senators are a little more aggressive about it. And I feel like the Red Wings, they do kind of warn other teams about things happening, because when a team beats them, they have like 8 different goal scorers, which alerts other teams about who the dangerous players are for that next game. And so the watches are like these little dinosaur things with just one big lens. It's like a telescope shaped like a dinosaur, that it can't really do anything but run and hurl itself at you. It doesn't really have an attack. It just throws itself at you. So that was my reasoning as kind of grouping the Red Wings and the Senators as the Watchers.
Yeah, I like your description and explanation for using the Watcher. I had the Sabres for the Watchers, and like kind of similar reasoning. Like they're definitely different from a lot of the other machines because they all resemble, you know, some sort of animal, right? And the Watchers are just so different, so it's not like they're even part of that. So I had it as the Watchers are the Sabres, like they're not really a real NHL team because of how bad they've been for so long. They're just kind of watching everything happening, and the worst they can do is just make a loud screeching noise, so you got to try to get attention, basically.
I interestingly had a similar reason for the Sabres, but a different machine. I went with the Tallneck. Because they're there, they're in the background. Sometimes you can see them sticking out from behind the trees, but most of the time you forget that they're there. They're just kind of there, going through the motions, walking around in a circle.
But if you get too close, the earth will shake from all the Buffalo fans body slamming people through tables.
Exactly.
See, I said the Tallneck was a situation room.
Okay.
The Tallneck is like the giraffe, but it's the biggest machine in the game. It's like skyscraper size, and your character like runs onto its head and makes a map, and it just walks around in a circle. But if you get in its way, it will hurt you.
Yeah.
And it's very slow.
Yeah.
Does it really? I don't think I've ever gotten in its way before. I've just been too nervous.
I have gotten in its way, not on purpose, and I was hurt. Yeah. So if you get in the way of the situation room, it can hurt you. It is slow, but it has a lot of information.
Yeah, and it doesn't adapt to change very well. It just
no, it doesn't.
It keeps going the same direction regardless of what happens around it.
But you can't kill it. Yeah. You can't get rid of it.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, that's good too.
All right, let's see. I have a couple more.
Yeah, I got a couple.
I'm gonna save one for last because I know. Well, I don't know. I'm 99% sure that at least one, if not both of you, chose this machine. But we'll see. So I'm gonna do the Behemoth as Tampa Bay in the playoffs because they are far more intimidating than they are dangerous. They look like this giant thing, and you're like, yeah. They're pretty easy. I can kill them in four games.
That's good.
Yeah. So did either you have either the Behemoth or Tampa Bay?
I did not have a Behemoth. Tampa Bay I couldn't decide on. You know, I was trying to decide on one of the more threatening ones, but ultimately just didn't arrive at one. I was thinking maybe like the Frostclaw or Fireclaw or something, but I like Boston for Frostclaw now that you guys mentioned that. So no, I don't currently have a home for Tampa.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And it also links with why I have a reason for who the Blue Jackets are. So this is a kind of connection.
We got a twofer.
So for the Lightning, I said it was the Ravager, which is this kind of like panthered wire screams at you thing that are, it's usually tough, but sometimes you can just explode them from pretty far away and then just move on with your life. Or you can weaken them and then set another machine after them, which is why I said Blue Jackets are the Strider, which is, again, the horse, because it is really, really funny if you set a horse on another machine and it wins because the horses are so weak and stupid. But you can just send them out there and take down something way bigger and more dangerous, and it is hilarious every time. So that was my two-part thing.
Nice.
Let's see, I had so I picked the Rock Breaker, was like this thing that like tunnels underground and then jumps up, you know, comes up and attacks you that way. And I was the first time I came across this thing, I was like, I thought like the game glitched. I had no idea what happened. Like I was, you know, walking through like that desert area, and then all of a sudden, like there's this loud noise and like all this dirt flying on my screen, and I was basically dead. And I was like, what the hell was that?
Oh yeah.
So I put the Rock Breaker as Vegas because they kind of come out of nowhere and they're really good and deadly, and you're like, what the hell is this? So
I definitely like that. I can't do better for that. I don't think that's a good one.
Yeah, I can't either. I'll totally take that one.
Yeah, because if I remember, I forget if this is the first time you see them, but I remember there's a part where you're there and you see like these two snap moths in the distance, and then on the hill, all of a sudden, like these rock breakers come after you. I can't remember if it's that, like, if that's the first time you see them. I think one time is in that, it's like a side quest. It's like the giant pit, like the quarry.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking of. And they're hard to beat because they have like 18 different parts that are all dangerous, but they should, and it shouldn't all work together. Like, it seems like it's just this like Mr. Potato Head of weapons, but it's really hard to beat, but it shouldn't work. But it's like this land seal that like leaps out like a dolphin or a whale or something, like a land whale.
Your descriptions on this game are so on point.
Okay, so I have one left, so I'm going to save it. So if you guys want to unload yours and save one.
Yeah, I got a couple more. Sarah, you got a couple?
Yeah, I got a couple.
All right, why don't you go first, and then I'll go.
Okay. I have a couple, and I forget what it was. So I picked the Deathbringer, which is like not an animal shape. It looks like, I don't know, a spider with a rectangle on it that shoots missiles. So I pretty much said that's just Alexander Ovechkin. It doesn't move necessarily that fast. And it can be defeated if you just target this very one specific place, like the circle, if you just put someone there and block him.
Yeah.
But it will blow everything up. So it's the Caps, but really for me, that one was Alexander Ovechkin.
So I had Deathbringer too, but I just went a different direction from it because, like, you know, throughout the game, you're discovering, you know, I'm not going to give anything away, but you're just basically discovering pieces of information of what led to the world being the way it is. And the Deathbringer was one machine that, you know, I guess they, like, as you learn about things, they were like this giant, you know, machine of death and like, oh, well, really, really tough and you don't want to mess with them. And then, like, when you come across them in the game, like, I just didn't think they were that dangerous. And so I kind of thought of it as, like, well, this team that maybe thinks they're a bigger deal, has a bigger reputation, but doesn't really own it now. So I put Edmonton because, you know, they used to be a big deal. but now, you know, the only death they bring is really to their fans. So,
yeah, I like it.
Okay,
it's interesting how we, like, interpret some of these differently. Yeah. Just go with it differently.
Yeah.
Okay, I have two more, so I'll do one and toss it back to Ryan.
Okay.
So we talked about the Frost Claw, which is like the bear, but I had one for the Fire Claw, which, as anyone can imagine, is like the fire bear. And only reason I said it was the Flyers is because it's like gritty. If there was a machine that was gritty, it would be the Fire Claw because it's big, it's round, it's crazy, and it likes to attack people. Mm-hmm. Out of nowhere. So that was my pick just for that.
When you called it the Fire Bear, I could not help but think of like the Care Bear.
Yeah. Gritty, with, like, Gritty a little... is the most violent Care Bear.
like a little flame coming out of its belly.
I like that. That's good. All right. So I had, I think like one or two more here. So I had, the Scrapper. It's, kind of like the Glenhawk, it's like a machine that just kind of scavenges other dead machines for parts. And so I thought of if a Scrapper was an NHL team, it would really kind of only pick up like bottom six players, maybe the ones it's familiar with. So I basically went with whatever team Lou Lamoriello is managing. He will only like sign or trade for like gritty depth guys. And most of the time they're players that he's managed before because he doesn't ever know learn anything new. So I guess the Islanders by default then are the Scrapper.
Ooh, nice.
So that's good, because that's one that I had also, but I had I had similar reasoning, but a different team, because I said it was either Arizona, just for the eating, kind of living off garbage thing, or the Oilers for a somewhat similar reason, but Scrappers are a little fast, and they always find you, unless you, like, take them out first. So I decided to give the Oilers a little credit for their speed. But also acknowledge that they do kind of pick up a little bit of garbage.
All right, so I have one left, and then you guys can unload any ones that you have. So I have a team that's been mentioned. Actually, I'm kind of doing what Sarah did, and I'm picking the Capitals, but I'm picking a different player specifically, the aforementioned Tom Wilson. I am linking them to the Scorchers, because anytime they see you, they just try to hurt you as badly as possible over and over and over again. And that's basically Tom Wilson on the ice. So, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
That's really funny because I had them as the Capitals also. Yeah. I had them as the Caps for that similar reason.
That's good. Can't argue against that.
Awesome. So, Ryan, did you have any more? Is that it? Or?
So I had the Shell Walkers. These are like these crab-looking things that just like pick up materials and just, I don't know, can't ever decide what to do with them. And so they walk around with them, basically. I thought of like what team has some baggage that they carry around with them, and I put Florida because of how just dysfunctional their front office has been over the last 4 or 5 years. So they're the ones that are always carrying around a bunch of baggage.
Makes sense, yeah. I like it. Sarah, you have any more or is that it?
I think that was it. I was trying to think of something for the Satmaw.
Yeah.
That's like a alligator. Or crocodile, whichever one lives in the water, I don't remember. Sure. Alligator. But they're easy to avoid, but when they notice you, they're kind of annoying. So I put the Minnesota Wild. That, especially because we lost to them very, very badly this season.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, otherwise we didn't notice them the whole season, and then they just murdered us. But then that was it.
Yeah.
Like, it was over. Yeah. There were no hard feelings. It's just, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Move on with your day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had similar reasoning for Snap. I was like, I wrote, you tend to forget about them, and then they surprise you with like a big, big win, big upset or something. So I had like Columbus in there.
That makes sense.
Like, you know, nobody remembers them, and then they make some big thing happens, and it's like, oh yeah, there they are, and then it's gone, and then now we won't think of them again for 5 years.
So. Nice. So
I don't think anyone has had a. Did anyone have a thunder like a thunder jaw in the game? Is like one of like, I guess. You know, like the robot dinosaur that everyone talked about, like when the game came out, because it's like on the cover, right?
Yeah, like a T-Rex looking thing.
Yeah, it's like, so it's like one of the biggest and baddest ones in there. Yeah. Did anyone have anything for that?
I didn't, because I didn't have anything for Stormbird either, which are like, they're both the big, massive super machines. And I was thinking about it. I was like, what's a Thunderjaw? It has 800 weapons. It's massive. It's a little faster than it should be. And if I'm going to pretend it's Anthony Mantha just by himself, even though that's not really accurate. But I couldn't think of a team that I wanted to give that much credit to.
And it does have one glaring weakness, which is punching other players in the head.
Yeah. It's very easy to break its hands.
It has that
little
side thing that you have to hit off, and then you just nail it in the side over and over again. Awesome. So for our listeners, if you have a PlayStation and you haven't played Horizon Zero Dawn, you should. It is fantastic. Without being hyperbolic, I don't know anybody who has played it who hasn't really liked it. And I know probably at least 10 people, and they're all different, different backgrounds, etc. Like, they're not all, super gamers or whatever. So it seems to appeal to a wide range of people. It's a really, really fun game. Definitely recommend that you check it out. It is probably available pretty cheap now, if not just wait for, the next sale and you can get it for like $1 or something like that. Ryan and I are actually, Ryan, you finished. I'm jealous. We are playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. And I can't say it's everything I hope for, because there are some parts that are a little annoying. But 99% of the game has been fantastic so far.
Yeah, I finished it last night. It was like midnight, and I was like, "All right, done.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished." No, it's really good. Like, I think I'm not gonna spoil anything here, but just now that I finished it, it was like reading some things people have said about like the ending, and I think it might be a little divisive among people, but I also think that it's very exciting and how it sets up, what's going to be, I imagine, at least like 2 or 3 more games, based on just the sheer size of the world and story and how they're taking their time with it. But as a standalone like gaming achievement and accomplishment, it's a masterpiece. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and you know, again, same thing. Like, I don't want to spoil anything. You know, because obviously, you know, the original game came out so long ago, but they've added so much to it. They took a section of the game that was originally 5 hours, 6 hours, and they expanded out to be 40, 45 hours, depending on, you know, if you do all the side quests and stuff. But the thing I think is amazing is that they took... you know, they took some of these side characters. In the very beginning of the game, you work with a small group of people that are... It's not that they're not important. Actually, well, in this game, they're a lot more important. But, you know, like, most of the gameplay, you are with other characters. And they really fleshed them out a lot. They really gave them interesting backstories. Kind of in the beginning, you know, the first chapter, they're still kind of like these almost stock characters, but then as it goes on, you get more backstory and you get more emotional connection to them, and I thought they did a fantastic job. And the other thing that we had talked about, Ryan and I had talked about while we were playing, is that the voice actors are just phenomenal. Especially for the characters of Tifa and Aerith, it used to be Aerith in the US version. The women that they hired for that just do a fantastic job. The writing is a lot better than the original. They give them a lot more, but like the actresses really sell the emotion of it, and make it so you can connect to the characters a lot more, I think. So yeah, that's definitely a really phenomenal game if you like that stuff. We're going to wrap up there. So thank you so much for listening. Well, obviously, yeah, before I wrap up, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Yeah. Happy to come aboard and, you know, equate NHL teams to machine dinosaurs that I kill in my spare time. So,
exactly. I mean,
it's actually funny. Like my, cause you know, the game, it's not like, you know, graphic in any way. So it's like me playing or whatever, and my 5-year-old daughter will come up to me and she'll just sit and watch. She's like, "Oh yeah, you're going after the dinosaur robots again, huh? Yeah. Okay, good job, Dad. Good job."
Yeah.
So now she says, what did she say the other day? She calls it like, "Oh, yep, those dinosaurs aren't getting their candy now," or something like that. Like that's her 5-year-old translation of, yeah, I'm going to go murder some machines.
Yeah, basically. It's definitely different than another game that we both played recently, God of War. It's a little different.
Just a little bit.
You can follow Ryan on Twitter. If you just Google his, or not Google, if you just put in the search function for his name, it'll come up. But it's also RK_Stimp, STIMP. You can find me on Twitter. I'm back on Twitter. I now have like 30 followers, but you know what? I don't care. I took some time off because it was just getting.
Oh, you are back?
I am back. Yeah.
I
didn't really talk about it on the show, but I probably should a little bit. Maybe, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but basically it's Twitter for me is both fantastic and awful. It is amazing because I get to connect with so many people I really like and read a lot of stuff and interact with them, make people laugh every now and then and post a silly photo. But it's also incredibly toxic sometimes. And it was basically just getting to be too much for me. I almost, I didn't get doxxed, but it was probably the next step in the harassment campaign. And I just took some time off. So, So I am back. It's the same handle. So it's at PFlynn Hockey. You can find Sarah at Helmeroids on Twitter, and you can find Jay at TheRoar_24. You can find our podcast at 200FootPod, 200FTPOD. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/forsurepod, FERSUREPOD. And lastly, if you want to get some For Sure merchandise, like the t-shirt that Ryan had mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you can do that if you go to tinyurl.com/forshirt, FERSHIRT. You can get our classic For Sure t-shirts, but we also have a lot of other stuff that you can get. I need to get a replacement pillow because my new dog Eddie has decided to tear it up. And
it is a fantastic shirt.
Yes,
an excellent shirt.
Yeah,
I wore it to was it the Seattle conference that was last year or 2 years ago or something? Yeah, I went to that one and wore it there. Was that last year?
I think so. I wasn't able to go to that.
Yeah,
one.
It was last year. Yeah, I wore it my night out there, so it was a repping the, you know, West Coast podcast. So for you,
nice, Awesome. Yeah. I should have tried to get some money in the budget to print out some and bring it to Columbus. Maybe raffle them off, but maybe next time. That's okay. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully next time Jay will be back. But Sarah obviously did a fantastic job filling in, as I knew she would. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.